This episode of the CU Insight Experience is brought to you by Elan Credit Card. Elan partners with more than 250 credit unions to provide an outsourced credit card program. Welcome to episode 149 of the show. I'm Randy Smith, one of the co-founders of CUinsight.com, and I'm excited y'all are here today. This show is all about taking a deep dive with the leaders of the credit union movement that make it so great. Today, I am having a conversation with Bo McDonald. Bo is the founder, president, and CEO of your marketing company, and Incommon. Also a return guest to the show. He had a very popular episode, episode 69 it was, as well. So let's just jump right in. Bo, welcome back to the show, my friend. Thanks for doing this.
Good to be here. Last minute.
Very last minute. That is true. Lauren's on me. We need an episode. And I'm like, I'm going to see Bo. So anyways, but I say that like I didn't want to have you back, but that's not the case. It's been a while, and I happened to be back down in Greenville for a few days. You and I got to get together a couple nights ago and have dinner and cocktails like we have so many times over the years. And as you said, that hasn't happened as much recently, and I do miss that. And I will say, it got me thinking quite a bit, like how much over the course of the years, we both started our companies around the same time period. You know, if we think back to like the first time we met and all of that, and just all those conversations, that's time that I've always appreciated. So thank you for doing this. Great to see you again. And I can't wait to get into all of this. For a little bit of background though, tell everybody, where'd you start your career? How'd it get you to credit unions? Let's get a little Bow background.
Nowhere near credit unions. I started as a radio DJ, and that had always been my dream, and not a whole lot of people actually get to fulfill their dream of what they want to do. So I did that and did that for a few years, but I always said I will be broke and happy, but I won't be broke and miserable. And and corporations were just sucking the life out of radio. It wasn't fun anymore. It was all scripted, and it just wasn't fun. So I got into the sales side of it, because I saw what I was driving and what the salespeople were driving. You know, I'm a car person. I'm like, maybe I'll try the other side of this. And I had clients, I would write their radio scripts, and they would actually come to me and say, hey, will you help me with my billboard creative? Hey, I need a TV ad. Will you help me write that? And I was young and stupid and gave up a steady paycheck to go open this marketing firm thing because people were asking me to do the work. It's been great ever since.
Absolutely. Do you remember the first time that you heard of a credit union or knew what one was? Like you said, you dreamed of radio. I'm sure there's not a listener out there who was like, someday when I grow up,
I'm going to work in credit unions. I want to work
in credit unions, right? But we all love it once we get here and it sucks us in. So,
no, the first time I'd ever heard of a credit union, I didn't know what it was. I didn't understand it. My father was fanatical about it.
Ah, okay. I've met your dad. We've shared Thanksgiving together.
Yeah, we did.
When I lived down here more. So.
I always share his story, and I won't on this podcast. Every once in a while, I do it in conferences or if I'm doing a keynote. I share why I'm passionate about credit unions, my father's story about how his credit union helped him. And he ended up getting on the supervisory committee and the board. And I never really understood, you know, my father's on the board of a credit union. I don't know what that means. Today, I think that's pretty darn cool.
Right, absolutely.
But at the age of 15, you're like, well, that sounds horribly boring. But ever since I was a kid, my father had been involved in his credit union. I kind of grew up in it.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. You know, it was after I got into credit unions myself, I found out that my dad was on the supervisory committee of the credit union up in Midland, Michigan while he was working. So
funny how that doesn't matter as a kid.
Right. Yeah. They didn't even know. No idea.
Now we're like, Dad, can I get your autograph?
That's pretty cool. So let's talk credit unions. Biggest challenges, we'll go there first, that you're seeing that credit unions are facing. And I would say that take this whichever way you want to, but whether it's like on the individual level or take a look from the blimp as an industry, as a movement as a whole.
I could name a laundry list, but the one that I've really been focused on, want to focus on next year, especially with our clients and when I'm speaking at conferences, is the word relevancy. I think we're losing relevancy. If you look at the customer satisfaction ratings, we've been losing for now 4 years in a row. And all of a sudden now we're behind banks. And it's not because we're not good people or do good work. I think it's the relevancy of the member experience.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Can you dig more into that? Because that's fascinating to me. Like, what have we changed? Have we stopped using our secret sauce? Has everybody else caught up when it comes to that? I mean, I know this is opinions, right? But like, what's yours on that?
I think it's a little bit of both. Okay. One is fintechs are just so damn easy to use. And they make it so easy to apply, get funded without a whole lot of thought, without a whole lot of work, without having to come into the branch and bring your driver's license. And I think that hurts. But there's also, I think, some fintechs that have copied what we do. If you look at SoFi, amazing. If you read their marketing materials, they use the word member. They have a program that is almost like they're developing seg groups now. I almost think they're credit unioning better than some credit unions do. You know, you look at stuff like that and you wonder, why are we losing to them? I really think it's all about experience and relevancy.
That user experience to me is something that I know you've been talking about for a long time. And that's something that I constantly talk about too, is like, we can't, if you and I decide to order something today off Amazon, or if we want to go through PayPal or Venmo, or if, you know, wanted to split the check, which thank you for picking up. But, you know, I mean, like, we can do that all so easily and instantly too, that expectation, our expectation of everything. I mean, I'm sure we're all doing our holiday shopping now. If we see that something's not going to ship for 2 weeks, we're like, what do you mean? That's crazy. Like, or we have to pay for shipping, you know, I mean, at this point. So yeah, that's fascinating. Let me follow it up with, what has you most excited, you know, for credit unions overall, and specifically too, for that, what you and your team at YMC are working on?
I go back to the word relevancy. I don't think it's a hard problem to overcome. So let me go back. I've been using this phrase with my team for about 6 months, and it's something we're going to tackle all next year. It's redefine marketing. We can't help what the credit unions do. We can't meddle in their operations. They have to be responsible for that. But what are the words we're using? How are we marketing? What channels are we using? And we're coming up on our 15-year anniversary next year of YMC. And I started looking at, are we relevant? And are we walking the walk that we're talking? And when I say redefine marketing, we went through an exercise just a few weeks ago. And I asked my team to think back 15 years. Where were you in your life 15 years ago? And we went through the historical, what was happening in that year 15 years ago? And it was, I think, the second gen iPhone was just coming out. If you go back to what that second gen iPhone was, it was nothing like it was today. Right. So, you know, when you want to buy something, when you want to post your food pictures, life is very different 15 years ago. And if we're still marketing like we were 15 years ago and just band-aiding it and maybe, you know, dabbling in TikTok and, you know, we don't have to chase the shiny new object, but if we're not exploring those relevant channels authentically, and that's the key word, authentically, we're not going to be relevant.
Okay, now I'm going down a rabbit hole, and this is why I love Bo. These are the types of conversations that him and I have every time we get together, and I think there is something to the idea that both YMC and CU Insight, we like that arc of the company's careers, or our careers, and they're on that similar, I mean, just from when we started, right? And like, I think back, and we've talked, the interesting thing at CU Insight in a lot of our planning, I wouldn't say we've used the word relevancy, but we probably will now, but it has been always that looking back, like what we would have done 15 years ago is not what obviously we would do today. So it not only like, what more can we do, but what are we doing that quite honestly isn't relevant, that's taking up time, capital, resources, you know, that idea too. And I also think back to like both when our companies were young, some of those ones that we looked up to at the time were probably 15 years old. Yeah. And we were like, oh, but they're old and, you know, stodgy and we can do it better. And, you know, I mean, we're new and fresh. And how do you stay relevant? How do you, besides talk the talk, actually walk the walk to make sure that YMC is still relevant, but also that what YMC is doing with the credit unions is relevant for 2022, 2023 almost now and beyond?
I feel like to a point we've been putting band-aids on it, and it's worked for us up until now. We, you know, there's a new trend. We try it. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. But I'd recently read a book, and it was called To Kill the Company. And it's actually something I'd already started working on. Then I read the book. I'm like, well, this is great. I'm already doing this. We were working as a leadership team to build a company that would put us out of business, focused on what do we know our weaknesses are? What do we do well? What do our clients love about us? And if we were going to build a competitor, what would we do with that? And it, you know, at 15 years old now, we're a very mature company. It's time to totally rethink that. And I've been exploring that with some credit unions too, and strategic planning. Like, let's not go through the motions. If you were going to build a financial organization that was going to put you out of business tomorrow, what would you do?
You mentioned that when we were at dinner on Monday night, and that's had me thinking, and I can't wait to get the book. Do you feel like a mature company? Sorry. This is just a total, like, yeah. You and I as friends, like, I mean, at times I'm blown away by what CU Insight and, like, watching YMC, what we've grown into, but there's still a part of me, and, like, when Dave and I talk all the time, where we're still like, well, you never know. Remember that bad month in July that one year? You know, like, there's still that. Sometimes I guess, wow, no kidding. This is, you know, like,
I would call us a mature company, but not a comfortable company. I think there's a lot of.
Is that a founder thing, right? Are you ever truly comfortable?
Well, I use the word comfort of, you know, we've been successful. We've never had an unprofitable year.
Yeah.
So it could be easy for us to say, well, we don't need to change. Let's just ride this out. And I see a lot of credit unions do that. I see a lot of other companies do that. So I would say we are mature, but I wouldn't say we're comfortable. We're always trying to figure out, how are we going to be here next year?
Yeah, no, I get it. That is for sure. I think part of that is that entrepreneurship side, right?
And actually, too,
right?
Go back, you and I were in Hawaii about 10 years ago at a Q's conference.
It's a nice life, it really is.
And Les McCown was doing a session, and he's all about the phases of a business.
I remember that, yeah.
And I get his emails every week, and I constantly go back, and it actually motivates me. I think back to that session, and it was about 3 years ago. I looked at some things that were happening in the company, and I looked at his chart, and I said, death rattle.
Oh.
If we go another 2 years like this, we're at the death rattle. You know, I don't want to be there.
That's good stuff there. So I'm going to circle back, because there were more rabbit holes I was going to go down there, and I may continue to, but I did want to talk about this. You mentioned radio. Like, that's where you got your start. You recently launched a podcast, which I'm geeked up about. You just were explaining it to me and telling me about it a couple days ago. So I'll let you tell people what it is instead of me trying to. But I'm geeked to listen to it. Number one, with your radio background, does it feel good to be behind the mic again? Number two, tell us about the podcast.
So the podcast production company, probably, I don't know how much they like me, because I insisted on producing my own opening and all the elements, because I'm a radio production geek. So I did that, and I sent it. They're like,
we should give a shout out to them, Podcast Solutions out in Oregon, because they've produced ours for years and years. Yes. Too, the CU Insight experience. So we do greatly appreciate that group.
So we sent them that, and they've been great to get stuff produced, but I had to buy my old Sony headphones that I used to use in the studio. I probably don't need them, and it's probably excessive for just a podcast, but, you know, the radio geek in me, you got to have those professional Sony headphones. But the podcast is The Accidental Leader, and it's really what we're talking about here at this table on this podcast. You and I don't think we ever grew up, so we're going to own a company someday.
Yep.
And maybe even if you say, I'm going to own a company, I'm going to lead a team of 10, 15, 20 people. And I used to think I was a great leader because I read Steve Jobs' book and I would buy pizza for my team on Fridays. And I realized, well, that's not working. That's not building the culture I want. And I ended up hiring a business coach for us, a mentor. And he was not cheap. And his truths were hard. But I really realized where I was failing as a leader. And there were a lot of places that I was. And I look back now, 10 years ago, I feel sorry for the people that worked for me.
Yeah,
at that point, I was a horrible leader.
Yeah.
And gosh, you know, I want to help people realize where they are in their leadership journey, where their weaknesses are, and, you know, the stories of other accidental leaders like you and I, hopefully we'll help them correct that course a whole lot faster than we did.
Oh boy. Yeah. You know, that's such an interesting thing, because I think a lot of the times when you, whether it's in our cases where you're starting a business, like in the beginning, you weren't leading anybody. Neither Dave and I weren't leading anyone. It was just us.
We were doing the stuff.
We were just doing and building what became successful businesses. But along the way, and I think you see a lot of founders that struggle with that, right? Like, is like how you lead and manage people is much different than how you found a company, right? So yeah, I like I said, I can't wait for your podcast. It's amazing. You know, it's interesting when you talk about that path, and, you know, maybe someday we'll have this conversation on air more in depth, but for us, it was even me realizing that that's not my strength. Like, being a leader is not my strength, and I still think it's one of the best decisions that I've ever made. And, you know, and I would give it to Dave as well. Both of us looked at each other and were like, this is not what we want to do. And that's why we have Lauren. She's been amazing. So one of the best leadership decisions I would say we made was realizing that we needed a leader to take CU Insight and run CU Insight and take it to the next level, which she's done. So, you know, you've worked with a lot of CEOs. So I'd like to keep on the leadership. You're going to, this would actually be fun to ask even more, probably a couple of years from now after you've talked to a bunch more where you're able to pick all of their brains and get, you know, all that amazing just experience from other people. But what makes a good one? You know, like we talked about what makes that you've seen that good leader, the good CEO of a credit union. And on the flip side of it, what makes a bad one, right?
On the good side, I think it's having a vision and high levels of quality communication where you can communicate that vision and you hire the right people to do it. You know, going back, talking about the podcast, you and I were doers. We started this thing. It was a very small company. And in the podcast, I go into the self-worth. When you stop doing, what's left for you? And you spend this week I spent 3 hours working on a presentation I'm going to do for some clients in January, teaching about task saturation. Why are you doing these things? And it's hard for me to say, I just wasted 3 hours on this instead of doing these things, but that's not my job anymore. I had to realize I've matured as a leader. Our company's matured. So what makes a good credit union leader? I think looking forward, you're a $100 million credit union now. You want to be a $150 million credit union. When's the last time you looked at your job description? Why are you touching ACH? You have three people in your accounting department. Have the vision, execute the vision, lead the people. Our most successful credit unions are doing that. They have a niche. They know what they do. They lead their people well. They're passionate about it. The not so good ones, I won't name names.
Right.
They haven't matured as a leader. Okay. They're the CEO of a $100 million credit union, but still acting like the CEO of a $25 million credit union. They're doing the doing. They're micromanaging. And they're going to be a $100 million credit union 10 years from now because they're just going through the motions every day and they haven't understood what is my job as a leader.
As you were saying vision, I was really zoning in on that. That was something, you know, recently returned from Africa and doing the Climb Africa, which we'll link to as well. But that was something like George Ambato from Akasaka. There were a lot of people around, and whether it was other African SACO and credit union leaders who were coming in for the opening of the academy and all of this. And person after person talked about George's vision. And the thing that I kept coming back to, because many were like, when George came to us with his vision, we thought he was crazy. But the idea that he was able to communicate that vision and then bring people on board where now it's a shared vision, I think that's powerful, right? Like, and that to me was, I was sitting back and I remember talking to Mark Meyer about it, standing in the back of the room, just going, not only does George have the vision, but he's gotten a whole bunch of people to buy into that vision as well. So I'd like to go there from a leadership standpoint. Whether it's working with YMC or when you're working with credit unions, how do you get the vision, the buy-in from an organization that, and I hate to say the phrase, but I'm going to say it again, that like we've always done it that way. But like when you talk about, to bring it full circle, staying relevant, becoming more relevant, any hacks, I guess, that you've picked up along the way on, one person can have a vision, but if it's not a shared vision, you're not going anywhere with it, right?
Where do I want to go with that? Time, I think, is one. We've had some amazing new clients over the last 2 years that are brand new CEOs, and they've committed to credit unions that have either been on the brink of failing or they've been comfortable. They haven't done anything. They haven't grown. They haven't changed. And they've come in with a vision, communicated that vision, and it, and I said time when I started the answer, you ain't going to get there in 3 weeks or even a year. You know, they're 2 years into their journeys and they're still crafting that vision. They're still finding the people who want to follow that vision versus the people that are uncomfortable with it and say, well, this is new. I don't like this. I don't want to do this. I would say time and good communication. For me, I can have a vision. I'm a horrible communicator, but I have a leadership team that surrounded me that they are good communicators. Yeah. They know how to lead their people so much better than I do. And that's where I lean on them. Here's the vision. Help me poke holes in this as a leadership team. Where are we going wrong so that we can craft this vision and you can lay this out to your team and help us get there.
So let me talk to you about this, that you just led me right into it. Thanks for serving this up, this next question here. That idea of building a leadership team, and when we talk about culture and when you're talking about vision as well, when you're looking at building a leadership team, taking it all the way back to like that beginning, the hire process, like, is there something that you're looking for that like over time now you've realized, because I'm sure both of us have hired a lot of people and some are still there and some are not for many reasons, but that question of like, is there something that you're looking for? Is there, and then on the flip side of it, is there something that like when somebody comes in that instantly turns you off? You're just like, nope, you might have the greatest resume, the greatest experience, but you just said something that, yeah, sorry, that's a no-go.
To me, so we've got the FLY program, Future Leaders of YMC, and it's the people that want to lead, that want to grow within the company. And I want to teach them leadership, but most importantly, I want to teach them how to deal with people. And that's the most important thing to me. If you can have the empathy with people and understand they have a root system, some people that seem like horrible people aren't. They're just reacting the way that they know. And if you can crack that nut and get to those people and really find, are they just broken people and we can work with them? Or are they truly garbage humans and they need to leave the organization? There's two ways to go with that. But what do I expect out of my leadership team is empathy, and they want to see their team grow. And, you know, we can focus on profit, we can focus on numbers, that's all well and good. But I feel like the more we focus on leading our team, they serve our clients well, and our clients are happy, and they stay, and they tell more people, and then we get more clients. And it all starts with having a team that cares about what they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that turns you off though, where if you're like in the interview process, that if you hear it, you're like, you don't fit here.
Interviews are so tough because it's like going on a date. You can get into that relationship within a year and be like, I got sold a bill of goods.
Yeah, absolutely.
But one example, we just hired a brand new position on our leadership team, and we were about a month in. She spent about 20 years at one of the largest agencies here in South Carolina. So I knew she was going to challenge us. She had a lot of great things to offer us, stuff that was going to make me very uncomfortable as we were maturing as a company and we needed, you know, better processes and to fill some of those gaps. And it was one of the first, probably within the first month, she had conflict with another team member and she did not handle it the way that I wanted it handled. It was off the rails. And we just had a conversation that, you may be right in what you're upset about, but you can't treat my people like that. You can't treat your people like that. And luckily we had a great conversation after that. And she shared why she responded like that. And that was so cool for me as a leader to say, this is our culture. This is our line in the sand. You're not going to cross that. And she came along and I've seen the growth in her. And now she's a lot older than me. So for me to look at someone like that and see her grow and go beyond just the skill set that I hired her for. That's cool. That's good stuff when you can
get
there.
And you never know the culture she came from. That may have been the way totally that it was brought up, right? Like, and it's like, oh, you're at a different
place. That's how
now,
things
right?
were handled at this, you know, 1,000-person marketing firm.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You mentioned the YMC program to bring along future leaders. You work with a lot of CEOs as well. We were talking recently about the fact that, you know, being 15 years now almost in, that some of the people we were coming up with now have become CEOs at, you know, different credit unions and things of that nature. So if you had advice for that person out there today that's listening, who's maybe they're on the senior leadership team, but they want that CEO chair at some point in their career, the difference between being a leader in the organization and the leader of the organization, any advice to that person who wants that chair someday?
Invest in yourself. Find coaches, find other leaders that are amazing. Don't just look at the numbers of the credit union. We've done that sometimes. And when we start digging into it, the numbers are great, but the culture is horrible. But find those, and it doesn't even have to get out of the credit union space. Find a company that's got an amazing culture, an amazing business, study them, read, listen to podcasts, take everything with a grain of salt. You know, don't read a book and say, I'm going to do that. Pull out the five things from that book that fit what you want to do.
Absolutely. I'm sitting over here laughing, which people can't see because I'm like, my God, this is so easy to do with you because I feel like you're just teeing me up more and more. So investing in yourself. What's the greatest investment you've made in your career when you think back? And I use the example on the podcast, Warren Buffett said it was the Dale Carnegie speaking courses for him. What was Bo's greatest investment?
The first business coach that I hired, it was stupid expensive. And I was really scared when I wrote that first check. It was $25,000. Oh, yeah. And as a small company that isn't making a whole lot, it was a big gamble for us, but it's a gamble that paid off a lot. When I hired that business coach, you know, he would always speak truth. And there were other mentors that I would talk to. I remember Ravi Vetrano had a monthly article in Inc. magazine, and he had a successful advertising agency in New Orleans, had other businesses. And I asked him out to coffee one day, and he gave me great advice. And I left there saying, I could never do this.
I absolutely love that. Do you have any thoughts on, so like this was somebody that you didn't know, you knew through writing, like through his writing, and but you actually took the time to reach out and quite honestly had the guts to reach out and say, hey man, want to go get coffee? Which people will tend to say yes to. One of the things that I've learned over time, and I wonder if you could share this as well, is when you're reaching out to people like that maybe you respect their business or you respect something that they're doing and you want to get to know them, is did you come to that coffee date, I'm just going to call it, with some questions that weren't like, how'd you do it, man? Like where it's just so broad. And I think my guess is, you know, now that we are a little bit older, we have people, whether it's they're starting a small business or they're getting in, that will ask us questions. And I find personally, I'm willing to spend all kinds of time, but there needs to be some direction. Anything on that? Because I think that's such a powerful thing for other people out there. If you want to be a CEO, who's that CEO you respect? Might not be in your credit union. Reach out to him, ask him to coffee at GAC or whatever it happens to be, right? Like any hacks, any thoughts on how to do that? Because you just mentioned one.
Two things. First is I had specific questions for him. He was running an ad agency and he had these three other businesses. And I was just running my small firm and I couldn't imagine, how do you find the time to do this? I know we all have the same amount of time in the day. You don't have more time than I do. How are you doing this? And he gave me great advice, and it was, I have an idea. I'm a horrible executor. So I have a vision. I hire people that are good executors that fall in love with my vision, that can take it. And then I go on to another project, but I'm still there leading this team. And that's the second point. I left there thinking I could never do that. So here I just took 2 hours of this professional's time, and I left and did nothing with it for a few years. And there's so many times that I've been given advice like that, where whether it's, you know, a paid coach or just someone I look up to, and I don't do anything with it because I'm like, I could never do that, but I can. I had to get out of my own way and get that head trash out to realize I'm a control freak. I need to do everything. And it was me that was standing in my way. If I'd listened to his advice 5 years ago, I can't imagine where I'd be today.
There's place and time, right? But there's also, I think, something you said when you were talking about, you know, reading and things like that. It just because that's the way he did it doesn't, but if you left with a couple nuggets that you acted on at any point between now and then, or the same thing out of a book, it's not like you have to follow exactly what the book said. You're kind of creating your own Bo McDonald that works best for you and is the most authentic. At least that's my opinion. I was excited to ask you about this question too, just because we've both went through a similar process here over the course of the last few years, and that's that idea of what work looks like going forward. You work with credit unions. Many credit unions were skeptical, would be probably an understatement on the idea of remote work pre-pandemic. CU Insight hasn't had an office for quite some time now. You no longer, I've been to many of your offices, just like you've been to many of mine. Yeah. You no longer have one either. Hadn't even realized that you were 100% remote until we were out, because I was like, I can come by your office. You're like, I don't have an office. So we're at my dining room table in Greenville. What does that career in credit unions look like? And I asking to break out the crystal ball, not tomorrow, but maybe 5 years from now, if we want that top talent to want to work for credit unions, what does that career look like?
We've tackled this in strategic planning so many times this year. There are so many open leadership positions at credit unions that aren't getting filled. And it's because they're stuck in the way they've always done it. And the concern is always, well, we have to have someone in here. And when I ask why, there's just kind of the befuddled look. Well, security issues. Well, the rest of our team is here. And they go through that list. And I have to think back to 3 years when my team started talking about flex time and remote work. And I was that guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Over my dead body, will you not be in the office?
You were always a... I think that was why I was surprised that when you told me a couple days ago that you didn't have an office at all, is you were always a very in-person, this doesn't work for us, you know, I mean, that type of thing. So
I clearly remembered it was January of 2020, and I'd finally started saying, maybe we can look at flex time, you know, work from home one day a week. Still not comfortable with it. Let me look into it. And then on March 16th of 2020, right. I said, it was almost like an Oprah show, and you get to work from home, and you get to work for everyone gets to work from home. And we brought everyone back. Gosh, it was probably July, sent everyone back home in August or September when COVID flared up again. And I just decided y'all came back to the office, but we were so much more productive when we weren't in the office. And I don't know why. They wanted to work remotely. They worked well remotely. So we sold the office. And it was just gaining that trust and having to rebuild the culture.
Anything you've picked up along the way? Because since you've been fully remote, you've obviously brought in new employees. How have you kept the YMC feel? Any hacks there? Because I know that's a big thing that I think all of us that are fully remote struggle with is how does a credit union who hires the new CFO but lives in a different state, but they were able to get the best person on the board, right? To use a draft analogy, you know, any thoughts or hacks on that?
There's nothing that will replace in-person. But there's a lot of tools you can use to supplement that. So we have our crew of culture. It started with one of our VPs. She led it. She's not leading it anymore. The team has taken it over. We've got a team of five on our team that, you know, they're very intentional. Every Friday during our Friday meeting, after that, the crew of culture kicks in, and there's always a game or some kind of activity. And we're always learning about each other. We're spending that time with each other over Slack. You know, it's great to communicate project stuff, but there's a few channels in there where it's just those things you'd pop into someone's office and talk about. What'd you do this weekend? Tell us something good. So you still have that personal connection. Even though there's probably four team members I never met in my entire life.
Yeah.
But I feel like I know them just as well as 5 years ago when we were in the office.
When the folks that were there. Yeah, that is important. We're still trying to find ways to connect. Like this Friday, we're having a baby shower for Robbie. So
so how do you do Zoom. That? So I'm going to flip the tables. I'll ask you the question as the host. You've got team members over the country. Are you bringing them all in here to Greenville to do that?
Nope. It's over Zoom, and Linda's organized it. And it's, you know, oh gosh, I'm glad this will come out after the baby shower, because I think it's a surprise, to tell you the truth. So, speaking of Slack, there seems to be a separate channel that Robbie's not involved in that's in Slack that's been doing the planning of this. So,
Dear Podcast Solutions,
right?
Date.
Right. Yeah. So, nope. It's actually, I know when it is, and this will come out after that. So, Robbie will not hear this until afterwards. But congratulations, Robbie and Stu. Before we move on to the rapid fire questions, because we are getting towards the end of our time here, was there anything that you hoped I was going to ask you or that you wanted to talk about today on the show?
I mean, we could go for another 5 hours.
That's kind of how I feel. We just need a Bo and Randy show. Just sit down and...
Next time we go to Hull's Chop House, we're just going to bring the microphones there and sit at the bar with our wine and talk. I feel like our conversations are great like that.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, then we will move on to the rapid fire questions. I did have to, it's been fun because I've recently had some repeat guests on the show. So I've had to come up with some different ones because I just didn't. If people want more of Bo, they can go back and listen to episode 69 after this as well. Like I said, one of the most popular episodes we've had in the 4 years of the show. First question, what was that first job you ever had? Was it the radio gig?
No, it was the skating rink. I was DJing at the skating rink.
Okay, I have to tell everybody this. Bo was a double skater, so you might get mad, but your dad, which you should be very thankful for, I asked for many years for a picture of you in like sequence, like shooting the moon or something like that. Sorry, I know this is audio, but I literally just kicked my leg out like I was roller skating when I was younger. So
if he ever needs to go in a nursing home, he knows who's going to take care of him. That picture's not getting out.
That's getting out. Exactly. It would be amazing though. That would be such a fun cover photo for this. Come on, dad. No. When was the last time you were amazed by something, either personal or professionally?
Oh gosh, I'm gonna go back to the YMC family meeting. We had a guest speaker. He's actually going to be the first guest on my podcast in a few weeks. Ash Davis, he's an author, TEDx speaker. He wrote a book called A Life Through Letters, and it was a collection of letters that his father wrote while he was dying, and it was to people, to things. And I invited Ash to come speak and open our family meeting, our client meeting. And the vulnerability of our clients, our team, as he went through, of course, there were tears as he was sharing the stories from his father and from the book. But then he laid down the book and said, "Now you have to write a letter." And everyone in the room was challenged. And I walked out in the hallway. I saw one person crying there. Someone else walked into the bathroom, found some crying in a stall there. And first of all, I promised my clients next year we're opening with a comedian. I'll flip that. But I was amazed at learning about people and hearing their stories, because some people shared their letters in front of the room. And gosh, just, you know, that moment of vulnerability, you don't always get that in a business setting.
It sounds like you created an experience, my friend. So even if you bring in the comedian last year, people will probably still be talking about that one for many years to come. That's pretty cool.
That hit the heartstrings. I haven't felt like that in a long time.
That's awesome. I love that so much. Is there anything that you're currently working on about yourself? You know, what's taking up the personal growth space for Bo?
Real estate. It's been a fun side hustle. I got into it accidentally when I accidentally bought our first office.
Yeah.
Outgrew that, sold it, and of course we made a profit on it. My accountant said you should probably put that back into real estate, and I've gotten into commercial real estate. 2 years ago, I moved to little downtown Liberty,
outside of Greenville.
Just about 20 miles from Greenville, and the downtown was nothing. And I'm used to living in Greenville, where I can walk outside my door and am I going to have Ethiopian, Indian, Mexican, a burger? There's 100 restaurants and bars. There was nothing.
For all you listening out there that haven't been to Greenville, you should really make a weekend trip for it. You'd really love it. And then pop down to Liberty too and see what builds up and build.
It's beautiful. And I moved to Liberty and there's just an empty downtown, literally empty, you know, not an over-exaggeration of a few things. It's empty. And it made me sad to see these old buildings sitting there and rot. So I looked at my real estate opportunities and said, well, let's buy one of these. And then I filled it and bought another one. And the gentleman's putting a restaurant in there and doing an awesome job of revitalizing this old historic property. So it's been fun to see the downtown start to come back to life.
The thing I love about watching what you're doing there is that credit unioner in you is like you moved to Liberty but became a part of the community also, and like the growth of the community. It reminds me of so many credit unions out there. So anyways, well done, my friend. I want to jump to this one. Is there anything that you are unreasonably cheap with or thrifty?
Groceries. I've got a beautiful kitchen. The kitchen that is in my house, I didn't put it in. The former owner did. Probably cost more than my first house did. So most of the time when I get home late, I want to make hamburger helper or a deviled ham sandwich. So I'm unreasonably cheap. You know, when I'm going to cook, I go to Fresh Market or I get the good stuff, but I can't stand a high grocery bill. I buy crap junk food.
I think that was something that surprised Jill and me, is that I love to walk down every aisle and find the deals.
Yes.
Even if we don't, I still love that so much.
I want to see that number when I check out of the, you saved this much.
This is a place that I am as well. So I hear you there. Chairman Harper recently, over the past summer, I was having dinner with him and he was like, you know, a question, I'd love to hear it. I was like, I love this question. So I've added it to the show since then. So it is a new one since you were on last time. Who plays Bo McDonald in the movie, the biopic of your life?
Jack Nicholson.
Awesome.
The bio's already been done. It's called As Good As It Gets. The salty old cranky man living alone in an apartment surrounded by books and music. And then all of a sudden has this awakening.
That's fantastic. I love how fast you had that. You mentioned a couple books already that we'll link to in the show notes. Anything else you're reading or you think anybody else should read out there?
And from a leadership standpoint, there's a really good series. Ryan Holiday has a few books out. I started with the Daily Stoic, and he's got two or three others. Ego Is the Enemy is probably my favorite. Any of his stuff, it will shake you. It will make you think about yourself as a leader and why you do what you do.
I am a huge Ryan Holiday fan, and I actually think that might be the first time in almost 150 episodes that anybody's mentioned him. So that's too bad, but that means that everybody, hopefully, has a new read there. The last question that I really have for you in this, and like I said, I had to jump around a little bit because I didn't want to ask you the same stuff I asked you before, is like, what's that best piece of advice that you ever received and like, who gave it to you?
Go to the concert.
Well, now I have to ask another one. Well, who gave you that advice?
It was somewhat, gosh, it was April or May of 2020, and it was mid-pandemic. We weren't working in the office, but we were hiring for a position. And of course, we're still trying to figure out how do you hire virtually now. So she came into the office. She was a younger lady. And we asked her that same question. You know, what advice would you give your younger self? You know, the typical cliche interview questions in a first interview. And she said, go to the concert.
I love
and
that.
I did the same thing you did. But tell me what that means. Yeah. She said, there are so many concerts that I wanted to go to. And I kept saying, I'll do it next time. I've got work. I've got to do this. And she said, that work will be there tomorrow. I lied to myself of thinking that this was important. And it really wasn't. It could have waited 3 days. I could have gone to the concert. And I look back on that now and I think of, you know, how many artists died during COVID that I kept saying, I'll see them next time. I'll take this work commitment and just go to the concert next time.
Okay. Well, now I'm adding another question because your music background and I know you love live music. What are you listening to today? What's the top of Bo's playlist at this point in time?
See, you ask a music lover that, and if you were going to my iTunes, you'd be like, this has got to be eight people's playlists all mashed together. Right. I would say one is the Black Keys.
No,
I'd never been a fan of them, but I'd never really listened to them. Yep. And this is one of the beautiful thing about going to music festivals. You're exposed to things that you would never listen to. So we were at Pilgrimage Music Festival in Nashville last year, and the Black Keys were closing out one of the stages. And I'm like, let's go see what these guys are about. Three guys on stage that sounded like there were 20 people up there playing music. That was amazing.
I had a Black Keys stretch years ago that I just really dug them. That's now you're gonna be revisiting that and maybe the flight home today. So last question, any final thoughts you'd like to share or ask to the listeners out there?
Think, be relevant, redefine your credit union. Something that's so important to my heart this year is, you know, looking at relevancy. Do the simple exercise. Write down what your life looked like 15 years ago or 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whenever you became CEO or started at your credit union. And then do that same thing. What were you doing at your credit union 15 years ago? And how much has changed and how much hasn't? And that'll be a gut punch, I promise.
Well, there you go. Thank you so much, my friend, for being back on the show. I went longer than I've been trying to go recently, and I could have went another hour, I'm sure, or five. I absolutely love talking to you, and I have a million other questions that I did want to ask. So anyways, we'll have to do it again soon. Before we go, though, like I always say, we linked everything in the show notes. You can find out more information. There are going to be some good ones. I would recommend everybody pick up the Ryan Holiday books or go down that rabbit hole a little bit because you'll keep going. Make sure also to check out Elan Credit Card in the show notes. Their digital technology, industry-leading rewards products, and commitment to credit unions have made them a great partner for the show. And I am very grateful for their support to be able to have this much fun doing what I do and having conversations with my friends like Bo. Please also subscribe to the Studio Insight Experience on your favorite podcast player. We're on them all. We will also link to Bo's new podcast. So subscribe to that one too and take a listen. I know I will be. And if you're looking for any of the books we talked about today, a quick Google search of the CU Insight Experience podcast book list and your next read can be on its way from Amazon. Last but certainly not least, I want to thank you all for listening. Y'all rock. And I appreciate the kind words that come in about the show. Be well, my friends, and I hope to see you all soon.